Dr. Kristen Joskowski. She's going to be discussing the influence of consent on college students' perception of the quality of sexual intercourse. Dr. Joskowski is an assistant professor of community health and affiliate faculty in gender studies at the University of Arkansas. Her research focuses on understanding sexual consent, sexual violence prevention, sexual function, and the application of health behavior theories in intervention design. She teaches courses on health behavior theory and human sexuality, and Dr. Joskowski received her PhD in health behavior from Indiana University.
Thank you. And I'm actually really glad to be going last in this room because I have a sense that my work sort of is that the speakers who have gone before me sort of build the foundation for why I think that this particular study is important. I'll be talking today about the influence of consent on college students' perception of the quality of their sexual intercourse at the last event, the last time they had sexual intercourse. And this sort of also piggybacks on a discussion that we were having yesterday in the Sexuality Task Force. We were discussing the sort of shift in framework in sexual assault prevention education from the no means no perspective to no means yes. Yes means yes. Shift that we've noticed in the last several years in this framework, and my sort of critique of that, as others have said, and I'm not certainly the first to say this, is that this still is rather simplistic. We're still boiling it down to this simple discussion, and if we have this discussion, everything will be fine and there'll be no more sexual assault. But I think that it's about shifting the entire framework in terms of perceiving sexuality as positive and discussing it more, sort of what Heather has been discussing in her talk, and what we talk about the questions that have been asked, really shifting this framework, I think, and making our evidence-based information from a positive approach. And so I'm going to be talking a little bit about the influence of consent on our sexual encounters, and I've nothing to disclose. I'll first discuss consent research, and part of the reason I think that it's really important that the Sexuality Task Force has this affirmative models is because when we look at consent research in the last 15 years or so that we've been examining consent, it's really been done from a sexual assault framework almost exclusively, and this includes even some of my own research on consent. And we've looked at sexual consent in a number of different ways, examining consent cues or gender differences or differences based on relationship or type of behavior being engaged in, or even the influence of alcohol on consent, has all been done in terms of looking at consent as a way to prevent sexual assault and to inform sexual assault prevention education. And in fact, at the affirmative panels last year, I spoke about affirmative models with Dr. Satinsky in affirmative models in sexual assault prevention education. And so I think that the consent research has sort of mirrored that. Even in ways that we've sort of conceptualized consent, or consent has been talked about in broader ways, for example, within the consent research, there's sort of a discussion about miscommunication in terms of consent and that causing sexual assault, or sort of, in fact, that there's not a miscommunication going on. So some researchers suggest that sexual assault occurs because men and women have miscommunicated in some way their consent, and that results in a misunderstanding, which can lead to sexual assault. Other researchers have said, well, actually, men and women do accurately interpret each other's consent cues, and there's something else that leads to sexual assault going on, whether it's people ignoring consent or what have you. And then a paper that I'm working on right now that's under review with one of my graduate students, we've actually sort of found through some qualitative data that perhaps that this is actually bridged, and that there's a perception of understanding consent cues, but when it boils down to it, there is a miscommunication which could lead to sexual assault, but there's also other reasons sexual assault happens. Some of the work by Peterson and Mullenhart and Mullenhart and her graduate students, looking at aspects of consent and wantedness and token resistance and compliant sex, still look at this issue of consent, but then frame it in terms of sexual assault. And I think that that's really important work, but I'll talk a bit later on my implications about how we can maybe frame this, and this potentially could speak to the question asked earlier about shifting some of these ideas about sexual health research to be more positive. And so we see that even these conceptualizations are framed in terms of sexual assault. And even the measurement tools have been, when we've got a couple of measures looking at consent specifically, and again, a lot of these have been developed to understand consent with application for sexual assault prevention. So this all to say that if we want to change our framework in examining some sexual health issues, and I think sexual assault and sexual consent are important sexuality issues, we want to change this framework, I think we need to be examining some of these issues like sexual consent from a different perspective. As I mentioned, these previous studies on consent have sort of looked at implications in terms of improving sexual assault. But as we just heard in these presentations, as people were speaking earlier, there's a lot that goes into sexuality that's not just risk-focused. And in particular, as Heather just said, communicating your sexual preferences led to better sex. And so sort of my underlying assumption or perspective is that perhaps consent communication, it does imply a discussion between individuals that can lead to activity that is hopefully wanted, at least agreed to, and that potentially is the foundation for all sexual activities. And so if we're having difficulty communicating that, if we're not doing that the best that we can, that may serve to be problematic in terms of a number of different things, including not having the best or most pleasurable or most enjoyable sexual experiences. There's also folks who are sort of the supporters of active consent. This is that yes means yes mantra that I was talking about earlier, this idea that it's not just no means no, it's actually yes means yes, that can lead to better sex. And that really hasn't been fleshed out empirically in the literature, but that's been a sort of underlying perspective. So the purpose of this particular study was to examine consent beyond this sexual assault or rape framework. As I said, I think consent could be considered the basis of any sexual experience. Hopefully it should be, given the fact that consent is really should be at least there in some form, whether it's discussed verbally or non-verbally or what have you, should be there prior to engagement in any type of sexual behavior. And as I mentioned, miscommunication in terms of consent could potentially lead to miscommunication in other aspects of discussing your condom negotiation or your desires, what type of activity you want to be engaging in, if you want to use other types of enhancement products, lubricants or so forth. So I think that the consent really can be the foundation of all sexual experiences. So my study had a couple of different specific questions to examine. First of all, looking at, does consent predict overall quality of sexual intercourse? And when controlling for certain factors like alcohol consumption, relationship status, and will consent explain more of the variance above these other control variables? And will the relationship be the same or different for men and women? So, and I'll explain a little bit more about how I measured consent. They were measures that I had developed, but I'll explain that in a subsequent slide. For this study, I recruited college students, in part because a lot of my work is about understanding sexual assault, consent in terms of sexual assault prevention education, sort of that perspective that I just sort of critiqued. I do a lot of that work, in particular for college students. And so I was looking at college students at Indiana, and in order to participate, they had to at least be 18 or older and currently enrolled in classes. I had people removed from the sample based on a number of different reasons, being older than traditional college age or not completing responses, and then, of course, folks who had never engaged in vaginal penile sex were removed from the sample because the measures I used to assess consent were specifically for vaginal penile sex. And this resulted in a final sample of 640 college students who participated in an anonymous survey, and they were offered a gift card drawing as incentive for their participation. So the measures included some demographic characteristics that I'll show on the next slide, a measure of quality of sexual intercourse, the number of alcoholic drinks they consume prior to that intercourse event, and then two measures of consent. One was what I called the external consent scale, and one is the internal consent scale. And this is sort of based off of Charlene Mollenhardt's conceptualization from the early 90s of consent, and she sort of defined it in a in two different ways, as a sort of behavioral or verbal act, which is the external consent, which measures behavioral verbal indicators of expressing one's willingness to engage in sexual activity. But then she also described it as an internal set of feelings. And so I sort of had built these measures based on that theoretical perspective. And so the second measure, the internal measure, are sort of these internal feelings of willingness which inform the decision to have engage in sexual activity. And so some of the things that emerge within that internal consent scale included things like wantedness, agreement, but also things like physical arousal or desire or feeling ready or comfortable. So some of these feelings emerge, and that was that scale had been measured in that way. And so this chart gives you some idea of what the sample looks like. And you can see that there is an uneven distribution in terms of gender, but I ended up running two different regression models for men and women. And I just wanted to show some means in terms of the measures of consent and the predictor variables. And you'll note that men did consume more alcohol than women at last event, but in terms of other measures, there was some similarity, and then men also perceived their last event with higher quality than women. And these measures of consent were moderately correlated, which I think makes sense given that they were discussing the same, students were asked to describe these feelings or these indicators about the same event. And given that these were both these were two measures of consent, there would be reason to suggest that there would be some relationship between them. So when we look at the actual regression model, we'll see that this model first for women, that, you know, some of these predictor variables, like relationship status, alcohol consumed, and age did influence or did have a relationship with quality of sexual intercourse. But then when we looked at the consent, there was significantly more variance explained when we added the consent variables in, and specifically the factors that were most telling were physical response, safety and comfort, and the consent slash want measure. And I did present on these measures last year, not that I expect anyone to remember that, if they even attended, but I'm happy to talk more about what these measures look like, because they are a bit in-depth and complicated to describe in 15 minutes. So we see that with women. And then when we look with men, we see a similar pattern emerging. Men also, safety and comfort again, and the consent and wantedness factor in terms of those internal feelings. Those were things that they felt. And then for men, also what emerged was this direct nonverbal communication. So that was actually how they communicated their consent, which was different than those feelings that I mentioned earlier. The internal consent scale was really focused on these feelings. And I thought that was the more interesting piece to really examine, particularly because it only emerged for women and emerged in a similar way for men. And so I think that it's really important to note that the things that really emerged were comfort and safety and agreement slash wantedness factor for both men and women on the internal consent scale. So what that means is that as people felt more comfortable and safe within their interaction or reported feeling like the activity was more highly agreed to or wanted, they also reported a higher quality of intercourse at that last event. And I think this is interesting in particular when we look at some stereotypical gender views. They don't particularly align with stereotypical views of men, right? The idea of men feeling comfortable during that last event might not apply as strongly as it would with women. I think we tend to think of that applying to women. And on the flip side, with women, that idea of physical response emerged. And women reported physical response, and some of those things that were on that factor were things like feeling vaginally lubricated or aroused. That was under that physical response factor. When women reported feeling higher in that way, they reported a better quality sexual experience. And I think that that's important to highlight, because we might think of things like vaginal lubrication that are probably pretty important for women in terms of their quality of sexual experience, and that did come out in these findings. So I think this is really important, some of the questions that were asked, in terms of bridging fields like sexual assault prevention and sexual enhancement with consent as a link. So I think one way that we could better frame sexual assault prevention education messages is to say, not just communicate consent, yes means yes to prevent sexual assault, but yes means yes to have better sex, and hopefully also preventing sexual assault along the way. And so I think that using empirical, evidence-based programming and is really important, but we need to have the evidence there. And so I think that to answer, I think she might have left, but one of the women who asked the question at the very end of the last presentation, how do we get there? I think doing evidence-based research can help practitioners, doing evidence-based research that supports these affirmative models of sexuality and sexual health is how practitioners can use that research to frame their programs and to develop their programs. And so something that for the future going forward, I'd like to do this research utilizing a more comprehensive measure of quality of intercourse, looking and controlling more for the timing of consent within the the act, as some of my other research suggests that shifts and changes in terms of people's perceptions, and extend beyond heterosexual vaginal penile intercourse, as we know that there's a range of sexual activity that people are engaging in. So with that, I would like to open for questions, and also thank you for your time, and say that if you are interested more in this study, it has been published in the International Journal of Sexual Health. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is negatively. This is negative. So that meant that as women consumed more alcohol, they reported lower quality of intercourse. And you know, I think that could be for a number of reasons. It could be that we know that as people consume more alcohol, that can have an impact on their sexual function. So things like that vaginal lubrication. I talk about that in the article, why women might have thought, reported physical response. That physical response could be hindered potentially by alcohol consumption. Although that's certainly something I want to examine more, and I think is a limitation of this particular study, is not really having a well fleshed out understanding of the impact of alcohol on the intercourse.